Welcome to Roadside,
where we talk about the fascinating and sometimes disturbing history behind roadside attractions and unique destinations.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome back to Roadside.
Welcome.
My name is Abigail.
My name is Janica.
And she's also the best mom in the world.
Aw.
In case anybody was curious.
Well, good, because it's been a freaking morning, I'm telling you. And
yeah. Yeah. It's been a
day already.
A shitty morning, we'll say.
Well, yeah, literally. thanks to my dog. I appreciate you crapping all over your kennel, and that's the way that I got to wake up today. And
thanks, Ollie. You're the best.
Yeah, fun. It's wonderful.
Well, today is my episode.
Yes, it is.
And I have a very interesting topic for us today. I watched a part of a documentary over it and some articles and such.
All right. What are we doing?
So today we're talking about the Cecil Hotel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was actually one that was on my list a long time ago and I never got around to it.
Girl. Oh my God. You're so stupid. You're the dumbest cat that I know.
We're having a day with the pets around here, I'm telling you.
He's like trying to climb on stuff. But there's paper on top of it, so he's just slipping around. Let me move it out of your way, I guess. I'll be nice today.
So kind of you.
Anyways, we're doing the Cecil Hotel.
All right. The Cecil Hotel.
The Cecil Hotel is absolutely gorgeous. It is a beautiful building, but it has a lot of dark secrets.
Okay.
What started out as a luxury hotel for the wealthiest people became a hotspot for criminals.
Oh, fun.
Thieves, serial killers.
Oh.
Yeah. So it became quite the spot. But to start with, William Banks Hanner, Charles L. Dix, and Robert H. Shops got their idea to open a new hotel in downtown Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
They wanted their hotel to be this fancy, high-end place aimed at people traveling for business and like wealthy tourists who wanted to visit LA. So they started work. Their architect was Loy Lester Smith, and the vibe of the hotel was meant to be opulence and wealth and beauty. The lobby itself cost $1.2 million just for the marble.
Dang.
Which today would be $28 million.
Holy crap. That's a lot. Jeez. Yeah. Just for marble.
I know. Just the marble. They also added stained glass windows and alabaster statues. So it was like very fancy.
Yeah. Pretty.
The hotel is 15 floors without a 13th.
Of course.
Of course. And has 700 rooms.
Okay.
Is a giant hotel.
Yeah.
In total, the hotel cost $2.5 million to build, which today would be $46 million to build a hotel.
So half of it was for marble.
Just the marble in the lobby. Yeah.
That's okay.
More than half, really.
Yeah. That's a lot of money just on marble.
I know. They wanted it to be fancy, so they got apparently the best. The hotel opened in 1924 at 640 South Main Street. And for a few years, the hotel brought in what they expected, some really wealthy guests, some wealthy tourists, businessmen, and it did very well for itself for a couple of years. And then the Great Depression. Mm. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. Messed some things up.
Yeah. The neighborhood of downtown LA became not a very good area.
Mm.
It descended into poverty. Crime rates rose drastically. And it earned itself the nickname Skid Row.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a good 80s hair band.
Good to know.
Yeah, Skid Row.
It was no longer an area for the wealthy and influential. And neither was the Cecil, because it was right in the middle of all this.
Yeah.
So the Cecil became a hub for drugs, sex work, murder, suicide.
Yeah.
And gained the hotel a very dark reputation. The first recorded suicide at the Cecil was in 1927 when Percy Ormond Cook attempted to reconcile with his family after I don't know what, but his family wasn't interested, so Aww. He ended his life at the Cecil, and that was the first. In the 30s, there was at least 6 reported suicides in the hotel.
Jeez.
I know.
Why this hotel?
I don't know, man. We'll get there, because okay. there's a lot more that goes into it.
Okay.
In the 40s, in this area, there was an estimated 10,000 homeless people just in a 4-mile radius around the Cecil.
Oh, my.
I know. 4 miles. That's crazy.
Yeah.
In September 1944, we're going to go into some of the stories of the Cecil.
Okay.
This one I read about in an article, and it's absolutely horrifying. There's some bad stuff in here. Just warning.
Okay.
Anyone. I probably should have said that first. We're going to talk about suicide and death and some other things.
Okay.
So, September 1944, 19-year-old Dorothy Jean Purcell and 38-year-old Ben Levine were staying at the Cecil together. Dorothy woke up in the middle of the night and said she had a stomachache. She was going to go to the bathroom. And in the bathroom, she gave birth
to
a baby boy.
I wasn't expecting that.
Neither was she.
Oh.
She had no idea that she was pregnant.
Ask. Okay.
She had no clue. And she just gave birth in this Cecil Hotel bathroom.
Wow.
And when she took a look at the baby, she thought that the baby was not alive.
Oh.
So she had to come up with how to get rid of this baby.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And for some fucking reason, she thought the best way to do it would be to toss it out the window.
Oh, what the fuck?
Where he landed on the roof of a neighboring building.
Oh.
And he did not survive that.
But he was alive to begin with?
He was.
Oh, God.
So Purcell was prosecuted for this and was found not guilty by reason of insanity and was admitted to a hospital for psychiatric treatment. And that's the most that I know about her. But we're going to have a bunch of these little stories.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's very dark.
Yeah.
In 1962, Pauline and Dewey Otten were having a heated argument on the 9th floor. This was a married couple, and they were having some kind of discussion. And it got to the point where Pauline said, I've had enough of this argument. I've had enough of you. I've had enough of everything.
Mm.
And she threw herself out the window.
Oh.
Where she landed on George Giannini.
What?
Who was walking along the sidewalk and instantly killed them both.
Oh my God.
This is an insane hotel.
That's horrific.
It just keeps getting worse and worse as it goes on.
Oh.
I started watching this documentary and I was like, I don't think I can finish watching this. I'm just going to have to read some articles because like, watching it is different.
Yeah. Do they have pictures? Like that's...
No, but okay. Like listening to like firsthand accounts and seeing the emotion that people get about it, it's just a lot.
Absolutely. Oof.
In 1964, a woman named Goldie Osgood, also known as Pigeon Goldie, because she liked to feed the pigeons outside the hotel.
Aww.
She's like this very sweet, elderly woman.
Aww.
And she lived in the Cecil. And one day, no one knows what happened. They found her attacked in her room in the middle of the day. And she was found naked, stabbed, and strangled.
Oh my God.
In her room, just out of the blue, like middle of the day.
No reason.
Mm-mm.
What the heck?
None that I know of. And that's never been solved. No one knows what happened there.
Oh my.
The area became even scarier in the 80s. And the Cecil Hotel was no different. It would come to see some serial killers during this time.
Oh boy.
Richard Ramirez.
Oh no. Really?
A.K.A. the Night Stalker.
Oh.
Carried out most of his crimes while staying at the Cecil.
Oh, God.
Where he held a temporary residence for $14 a night. which today would be $40.93.
Mm.
There's no way I'd be staying at a hotel for $40.93 a night. So I know what kind of place that would be.
That, I was like, that sounds like a pretty sketchy place to stay.
It is quite sketchy, but this is the Night Stalker.
Yeah.
So Ramirez would go out at night, do his thing. He would hunt and kill men, women, children, and elderly people.
Yep.
And then return to the Cecil, where he would stand in the back alley and remove all of his blood-soaked clothes, throw them in the dumpster, and then walk up to his room in his underwear, which was also soaked in blood.
Oh, God.
This happened multiple times, and it was not out of the ordinary. People at the hotel were just like, all right, that's normal for here.
Yeah.
Just some man walking up in blood-soaked underwear to his room. That's totally normal.
Totally.
Yeah. So nobody ever reported him for doing this kind of stuff, which, hey, if you see someone walking through a hotel in blood-soaked underwear,
yeah,
maybe you should report it.
I would say that's a good time to report something.
Yeah. So he was eventually caught and convicted of 13 murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 5 attempted murders in 1989, and was sentenced to death. But he passed away in 2013 while awaiting execution, which is a long time to wait.
Yeah.
But he would not be the last serial killer that the hotel saw.
Oh, gosh.
We've got one more.
Ugh.
Someone that I actually hadn't heard of.
Okay.
In the 90s, Austrian serial killer Jack Unterweger.
I've not heard of him either.
Was staying at the Cecil, apparently inspired by Ramirez.
Oh, gross.
Like, he wanted to stay at the Cecil because he knew that Ramirez stayed at the Cecil and was trying to imitate his crimes.
Oh. Ugh.
So during his stay at the Cecil, I don't know how to really say it, but Unterweger, maybe?
Okay.
Strangled and killed 3 sex workers with their own bras.
Oh, God.
Before being caught and convicted. Yeah. He was also dating the receptionist of the Cecil Hotel at this time.
Oh, that poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, could you imagine?
I could not.
No.
He was caught and convicted and taken back to Austria for his sentence, for his sentencing.
But did he kill women in the U.S.?
Yes.
So was he convicted here too?
I think so. But I think he carried out his sentence in Austria. I don't really know exactly what happened.
I'm going to have to find more about him, as I've not heard about him, but
he's interesting.
Oh, gosh, that's awful.
A former resident named Kenneth, who lived in the hotel 80s, 90s, early 2000s-ish. I don't know exactly when.
Yeah.
But he lived at the hotel for a while, and he said he would never go higher than the 6th floor because that's where the worst stuff would happen.
Oh.
People that lived in the hotel, criminals, would lure people up to the top floors, and once they got them in the room, they would rob them, beat them, and throw them out the window.
Oh my God, what the hell?
This was a frequent occurrence at this hotel. People began to call it hotel death.
Well, I can kind of understand why.
Yep, I can see it. So the hotel was sold in 2007 for $26 million. And it was not in good condition, still not in a good neighborhood.
I wouldn't have paid a dollar for it.
Yeah, for real.
$26 million?
I don't care if $1.5 million worth of marble is in there. I don't care. There's no way.
Or buy it and take that stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
But it was sold, and it was looking rough.
Okay.
Renovations began, and the new owners didn't want to keep the old tenants that had been living there for 20, 30 plus years and tried to evict them, basically. Because they just wanted like a new start.
Yeah.
But the Cecil Hotel was part of a program in downtown LA to help house homeless people.
Oh, okay.
So they had to allow some of the permanent residents to stay there, while other rooms could be used like normal hotels. But it was basically used as like a low-income housing type of thing to help get homeless people off the street.
Okay. I mean, that's That's good, except, like, yeah. I don't want people dying.
Yeah. We haven't gotten... I'm gonna warn you, we haven't gotten to the worst. I'm just warning you right now.
You've talked about Richard Ramirez and we haven't gotten to the worst?
Well...
What the hell?
I didn't go in depth with Richard Ramirez.
True.
I don't want to go in depth with Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, if you guys absolutely don't know not. About him, many other podcasts have covered him. So you can dive deep by another true crime podcast.
We always recommend Morbid. They have a multi-part series on Richard Ramirez. Very in detail, be forewarned.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
Yeah, no. One former hotel manager said that during the 10 years that she worked at the Cecil, they had about 80 deaths in the hotel.
Jeez.
Like, had to call authorities 80 times for people dying in the hotel for various reasons, whether it be murder, suicide, overdose, whatever.
Why would you work there even?
Right? Right? This woman was in the documentary that I watched, and she was new to the city, lived in this, like, country town her whole life, and I don't think that she really knew what the Cecil Hotel was when she started.
What was the documentary?
It's a Netflix documentary, Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel.
Okay.
It was pretty good. The hotel had a new reputation for being not the best. I mean, not really new. It's been not the best for like 40 years now.
A new reputation?
Yeah. but it had this reputation. No one wanted to stay at this hotel for fear of being literally murdered.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it was really odd. Mm-hmm. So the new owners decided, I don't know if this was a good idea, but they decided to make the Cecil two separate hotels in the same building.
Okay.
So they created Stay on Main, a youth hostel.
Okay.
That took up three floors of the Cecil Hotel. Basically, they took three floors and said, this is Stay on Main. The rest is the Cecil Hotel.
Mm.
And the Stay on Main is a youth hostel.
So let's attract a lot of young people.
Mm-hmm. Who are most likely, when you're staying in a hostel, traveling alone or in a group of two. You don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
You're looking for just somewhere temporary to stay while you're traveling by yourself as a young person.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Detecting my sarcasm, I hope.
Oh, I'm detecting it because I've got it too. Online, Stay on Main looked like a completely different place from the Cecil. It had a different front door entrance, a different lobby, different staff that wore different uniforms. The rooms were painted and decorated differently and advertised to look completely separate from the Cecil.
All these poor people.
And they called it a clean slate. So they started doing Stay on Main.
So people had no idea when they booked this or
where
they're going, that they're going to the Cecil.
Like, they see it online and it looks like this really nice, almost like fancy budget youth hostel.
Yeah.
Painted with like all these really bright colors to make it look very inviting.
Yeah.
They started to get more positive reviews for Stay on Main. And so they started charging more.
Oh.
Because they could.
Yep.
But the rest of the building remained the usual Cecil Hotel with all of its usual suspects. In one part of the building, there was this brand new, fresh place for young people to stay. And the other part was still running rampant with crime and death and drugs.
Oh my gosh.
It did really seem like a completely different place, except for one thing.
Uh-oh.
The common elevators.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where we are going to talk about the disappearance of Elisa Lam.
Okay.
In 2013.
Okay.
So Elisa Lam decided, she was a regular 21-year-old girl, Canadian girl.
Oh.
Loved posting on social media, just trying to find herself, struggling with some mental health issues. And she decided she was going to go on a solo trip.
Hmm.
She was on social media very frequently, posting on Tumblr, saying that, like, these posts were like a journal or like a therapist to her. And in 2013, she decided, I'm going to plan this trip out to California. Posted about it on Tumblr before leaving, saying she hoped it would help her stay sane and maybe help her get to know herself.
Yeah.
Because this was her first trip on her own.
Okay.
She even posted asking if anybody in Los Angeles wanted to meet up and hang out. When she got to LA, she stayed at Stay on Main in a room with a few other girls that she didn't know. They were just kind of like randomly thrown in together.
Yeah.
And she was one of those that was lured into this place with its online advertising to make it look really trendy and inexpensive but safe.
Yeah.
So she would go out to parties and bars and made posts on social media talking about how creepy the men were.
Oh, God.
How they just wouldn't leave her alone. And she was starting to feel uncomfortable. The other girls in her room began to complain about Elisa's behavior. And the hotel moved her into a room by herself. Soon after, Elisa disappeared on February 1st, 2013. And a security video of Elisa was released to the public by investigators to try to help figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Because they had searched everywhere. No one could find her. They had searched the whole building and no one knew where she went. And the only place where there was security cameras was the elevator.
Okay.
This video went extremely viral very quickly. A lot of like online web sleuths were reposting this video and analyzing it and trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Because there was some strange things in the video. In the video, Elisa gets into the elevator and she starts pressing like a lot of buttons.
Okay.
Only the elevator doors don't close.
Oh.
And the elevator doesn't move. She's getting in and out of the elevator, looking around the corner of the elevator, moving her hands in this kind of shaky, erratic way.
Oh.
And at one point, it looks like she's talking to someone who's out of the frame outside of the elevator.
Okay.
She gets back into the elevator. She's just kind of looking around and acting in a strange way.
Yeah.
And at one point, she steps back into the corner by the buttons, seeming like she's hiding from someone.
Yeah.
She looks around the corner, and then she steps back and hides behind the buttons.
Okay.
Another strange thing about this video is the timestamp, which has been, like, edited or, like, blurred out to the point where you can't really read it.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people were very frustrated about because they're trying to figure out what happened to Elisa.
Right.
Even though they're not really the investigators. You know, they're trying to figure out what happened. People began to get absolutely fascinated and disturbed by this video. And some figured out how to decode the timestamp to see what it said. And they discovered that the video had been slowed down by 33%.
Oh, okay.
And at one point, there is 53 seconds missing from the video. So a lot of people were saying something sketchy was going on.
Yeah.
Saying that maybe the hotel staff edited it or the investigators edited it. I personally don't think that the hotel staff or investigators were trying to cover anything up. It is weird that it's slowed down and that there's missing time.
Yeah.
But investigators will often leave out information just to see if anybody has the knowledge.
Yeah, that's true.
That they have.
Yep.
You know, trying to see who comes forward and messes up.
Yeah, they don't necessarily release everything to the public.
Right. So I don't think that that's necessarily true that any of that was funky.
Yeah.
19 days after Elisa's disappearance, there was a couple staying at the hotel. This is going to get gross.
Okay.
Oh.
And they made a complaint about the water pressure.
Okay.
And a funny taste and color.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
The water.
I can only imagine.
So the hotel manager sent maintenance to check it out. The maintenance man didn't see anything wrong in the couple's room, but other guests were complaining about the same thing. So he went to the roof where the water tanks were kept.
Oh, God.
To see if there was some kind of clog or something. And when he looked inside of one of the water tanks, he found Elisa.
Oh.
So hotel manager called the police, who immediately came to investigate, of course. And they found Elisa floating in the tank with her clothes at the bottom of the tank. Mm. The hotel, of course, was immediately shut down. Any residents moved out.
Oh, God.
Hotel manager was told staff, don't speak to anybody in the media about this because we don't want anything to get misconstrued.
Yeah.
So investigation began and police spoke to her family members, including her sister. Her sister spoke to police about Elisa's mental state.
Okay.
Elisa had been diagnosed with extreme bipolar disorder and was being treated with a few medications. But her sister informed the police that when Elisa was not on her medications, it caused a lot of problems for her, including hallucinations and anxiety. And
yeah.
And when they went through her belongings, they found that Elisa had not been taking her meds.
Oh.
Her meds hadn't been touched. She had full refills.
Okay.
So the Los Angeles County Coroner decided that Elisa's death was an accident, likely caused by paranoia and hallucination. But a lot of people did and still do disagree. Some people think that something more sinister happened to Elisa, whether it be by the hands of another person or some strange dark spirit lurking in the hotel.
Mm.
People asked questions like, why was the footage cut and edited? Why was the elevator not moving when she was pressing the buttons?
Yeah.
And who was she talking to in this video? Although it could have been no one.
Yeah.
Many people, like I said, thought it was someone that worked for the hotel, but nothing like that has ever been proven. And it's continued to stay that it was an accidental death.
Mm.
It was very unfortunate. A lot of people online got very connected to Elisa, going through her Tumblr, relating to her posts, trying to figure out this strange elevator video. And so a lot of people were struck by this news.
Yeah.
So that's very unfortunate.
Mm.
In 2014, the hotel was sold again, especially after the whole Elisa Lam thing.
Yeah.
They were just like, okay, it's time to move on. So the hotel was sold for $30 million.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And it continued to switch owners several times since then. In 2017, it was temporarily closed for renovations and was designated a historic cultural monument by the Los Angeles City Council, which is this an odd choice.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I understand this building is like an architectural wonder or whatever.
Okay.
But it's also like at this point, very run down. A lot of bad stuff has happened in this hotel.
I guess I question the because the history of it is not the best history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any kind of political or famous connection to it besides like Richard Ramirez?
Not that I know of.
Like that to me is not a building that I would want to have that kind of.
No.
Oh, I feel nauseous listening to this.
I know. And it wasn't a fun episode to research.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So in 2021, it reopened after being shut down for renovations and then COVID.
Oh, yeah.
It reopened and it's now an affordable housing complex run by the Skid Row Housing Trust, which I didn't know existed. And there is now over 600 low-income units, although only half of them are being occupied. Residents often complain about their neighbors and the conditions of the building, saying that there's drug trafficking in the hallways, arguments and fights that last until 3 a.m., residents destroying, punching out elevator panels.
Oh my gosh.
To the point where they're out of order. And the building is also infested with cockroaches.
Oh. Ugh.
So there is quite a big group of people that has been organizing and petitioning for help regarding the living situation in the Cecil.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to be getting very far yet. It's picked up some traction, but as far as I've seen, there hasn't been a lot of effort made to make the Cecil nice again. And as of March this year, it's back on the market.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Obviously, the Cecil Hotel is known to be very haunted.
Huh. I can only imagine.
People call it the most haunted hotel in L.A. because it's got all of this crazy sordid history.
Yeah.
It draws in a lot of paranormal enthusiasts from all over the world, such as the Ghost Adventures TV show. They've been there.
Oh, okay.
And they say it has been haunted by the spirits of the many people who have passed in the hotel.
Yeah. Ugh.
And I really did try to dig and look for more information about the hauntings itself, but I couldn't find a lot, honestly. These ghost hunting websites that, or like blogs or whatever, don't really talk about the experience of hauntings in the Cecil. They really just talk about the crazy past of the Cecil.
Oh, okay.
So I don't really know what kind of experiences people have had with ghosts or spirits or anything in the Cecil.
Huh.
The Cecil is still standing today. If anyone wants to move in, they've only got half the units full. So, you know, take your shot. Go move to LA and live in the Cecil. Please don't do that.
Wow.
And that is the Cecil Hotel.
Wow. I don't even remember how I came across it at one point, but I was like, oh, I remember here. I think because I was looking up something haunted at one point and I was like, oh, I could put that on my list. So I've had it on my list for a long time.
Oh, I didn't even know.
And it was never something that I, well, I mean, I have like 89 things on my list or, you know, to do. So it wasn't ever one that I've gotten around to, but my gosh, I just didn't know like it's all insane. Of the horrific.
And there's so much more. I'm sure I would have gotten a lot more if I had continued watching that documentary,
mm-hmm.
but it was a lot.
Mm.
It's mostly about Elisa Lam.
Yeah.
And that was a lot.
Yeah. Ugh, that poor girl.
I know. And she just wanted to travel, explore the world by herself, and discover who she is.
Ugh. Wow. Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize. It's what we do, you know?
I know, but it's not fun all the time.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Abigail.
Of course. Anytime.
Thanks for making me nauseous after my poopy morning, because that also made me nauseous.
Yep, I bet. Anytime, Mom.
It's been a day. You can follow us on Instagram at Roadside Pod.
TikTok at Roadside Podcast.
YouTube at Roadside Pod.
Facebook at Roadside Podcast.
You can email us at roadsidepod@gmail.com.
Or you can go to our website, roadsidepodcast.com.
And you can share with your friends and leave a review.
Please do. We would love that.
Absolutely.
We hope that you keep finding the thrill and the mysterious, even though the mysterious is
sometimes
not always thrilling.
Like this.
Yeah.
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 Thanks.
Okay. Have a good day.
Bye.
Oh, gosh. What a mess.